Okay, so that's not what I want either. Oh boy, let's see. Oh, this is annoying. Well, I just have to do it one by one. Let's see, microphone one. They didn't leave any CDs on. This is really a pain. All right, we should be in business now. the Danny Green Trio here on the Voicemobile at WMFO Medford. So, sorted out the board somewhat. I thought I understood how to switch it when the students leave it all on whatever they leave it on, but I didn't quite have it. So, having said that, there's some a couple things I want to share with you. One is that this Sunday night, Sunday, is that right? May 22nd, at 7:30 at Maimonides School, that's on Philbrook Road in Brookline, there's a lecture by Aviva Zornberg, and she is an incredibly gifted author and teacher. She will be, this is open to both men and women, and the topic is, after the revelation at Sinai, civil laws are given, many of them in the form of short narratives that describe how the violence of human aggression is to be met by the violence of the law. Those are her terms. We will explore Midrashic, Hasidic, and psychoanalytical sources that deal with the problem of integrating aggression and empathy. Quite a topic. Dr. Aviva Gottlieb Zornberg holds a BA and PhD in English literature from Cambridge University. For the past 35 years, she has taught Torah in Jerusalem at Matan, Yakar, Pardes, and the Jerusalem College for Adults. Dr. Zornberg also holds a visiting lectureship at the London School of Jewish Studies. She travels widely, lecturing in Jewish academic and psychoanalytical settings. This is co-sponsored by the Maimonides School. If you've never had the opportunity to hear her speak, you will not be disappointed. She's brilliant. I have her three books, and they're great. So, having said that, the other thing that I wanted to mention, and this is about Mr. Robashkin, Shlomo Robashkin. Some of you may be aware, either from me or elsewhere, that there was a case against him because of undocumented workers in his kosher plant, but it ended up being much more than that, and he ended up being sent away to federal prison for 27 years. Bizarre. And he's already served 7 years. So this is talking and addressing what may happen, hopefully what may happen. Prosecutors used disturbing tactics that secured a 27-year prison sentence for Iowa kosher slaughterhouse executive Shlomo Robashkin, according to a letter signed by more than 100 former U.S. attorneys general, judges, and others. The April 19 letter urges Kevin Takau, the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Iowa, to rectify the injustice done to Robashkin, who was convicted in 2009 of bank fraud and money laundering charges in the wake of a historic raid by immigration agents at his family's Pottsville meatpacking plant, agriprocessors. The letter comes as defense attorneys detailed new evidence in a March filing suggesting that prosecutors knowingly allowed false and misleading testimony at a sentencing hearing that U.S. District Judge Linda Reed relied on in handing down the lengthy sentence. Among the signers accusing the prosecutors of misconduct are four former attorneys general, the cabinet official appointed by the president to oversee all prosecutions by the U.S. Department of Justice, John Ashcroft, Ramsey Clark, Edwin Meese III, and Michael Mukasey. Other signers include former U.S. Senator and Democratic vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman, Republican mafia prosecutor and New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, and Kenneth Starr, a former appeals court judge who led ethics investigations into President Bill Clinton in the 90s. Former Federal Bureau of Investigation directors Louis Free and William Sessions signed the letter as well. It's a unique amount of support from political heavyweights that will grab the attention of U.S. Department of Justice officials tasked with deciding how to respond, said law professors contacted by the Des Moines Register, whose names were not on the list. But it's hardly the first time Robashkin supporters and notable figures, including former judges and members of Congress have publicly weighed in with concerns about how prosecutors and Reed handled the controversial case, said Laurie Levinson, professor at Loyola Law School and former federal prosecutor familiar with the case. For instance, more than 80 former federal judges unsuccessfully asked the U.S. Supreme Court in 2012 to hear an appeal from Rabashkin, calling the sentence unjust. Can renewed pressure convince Takao and the others that the convicted executive was wronged and deserves a chance that could put him on a path toward freedom? There's nothing to be lost by trying, but it hasn't worked so far, Levinson said. Unless they come up with new facts, that's really the important thing. Not that you have big names, but that you have facts and law on your side. Well, it goes into a lot more detail, which I'm not going to share with you. And when I saw that this man had gotten this kind of sentence, it defied comprehension. I'm not a lawyer, although my father was, but certainly I didn't know all the facts, but it just didn't make sense. What did make sense is that there were a number of other meat processing plants in that area that seemed to want this to happen. And the fact that they made him sell it, no member of his family could buy it. It's really a horrible story. And he has, I think, 10 children or 15 children. And, I mean, it just makes no sense. So, anyway, I just wanted to draw your attention to that. Unfortunately, our government and our legal system doesn't always get it right. All right, we're going to switch gears to a little bit lighter topic. Let's get my guest, Dylan Stanger.
Yes.
I got it right. Okay,
yes.
You're there. Okay, we're both here.
Yeah, right? Happy to be on here.
Yes. Yeah. So welcome to WMFO, and welcome to Tufts University, and welcome to the Voicemobile.
Thank you.
Ta-da-ta-da.
Feel welcomed.
Okay, good. So, we had this very interesting meeting at the Tremont Street Shul down in Cambridge a couple of Shabbases ago.
Yes.
And so we thought it might be fun to continue the conversation and share it with who's ever listening or interested. So you're involved, among other things, in startup.
Yes.
A startup company. Mm-hmm. So why don't you explain a little bit what that means, what that's about?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a sales consultant for a number of different startups. The main startup I'm involved in is actually in construction. Generally speaking, startups are they offer new and innovative products that are generally not seen on the market, and that's why they start up. This firm is a little bit more conservative. Going, you know, a little bit more slowly in its operations and its expansion. For them, I do their sales and biz dev work. So that's
biz dev meaning business
development.
Development.
I'm so sorry. There's the buzzwords over there.
It's
absolutely. So this company offers it's an EPC company, stands for engineering, procurement, and construction. It offers construction of solar power installations for commercial spaces.
Interesting. And of course, that's very much on the agenda these days.
Yes, absolutely. And there's a lot in Israel that they've done. When I did a lot of backpacking there, down south, it was just incredible, like the size of installations that are down there.
You mentioned something in our conversation that interested me. Any new construction is required by law? Can you talk about to have solar panels?
Oh, it depends on... Well, actually, it's interesting. It depends on the state and also the country. Actually, in Germany, I've heard that's a policy. And in California, I think that also might be a policy. But generally, we work mostly in the Northeast because of legislation. It's good for us.
Was it in Israel that you said that it's required?
I don't know in Israel. I know that in Israel that there is so much innovation there for solar. Not only solar, but also in startups in general. Herzliya, Tel Aviv. Actually, Herzliya is like San Francisco, has that type of look.
I don't think I haven't been to Herzliya. I've only been to Israel twice, and it's long years ago. And I just, you know, try to follow through electronic media, the different things. I know scientific innovation out of Israel is unbelievable.
It really is quite, and it's every single demographic. I just read an article about how venture capital is starting to catch on to Haredi startups.
So Haredi, for people who don't know what that word means,
is ultra-Orthodox.
Ultra-Orthodox. Yeah. People who hold on to the tradition with a vengeance.
Absolutely.
And don't let go, like a pit bull.
Black Hatters, they're now involved with a lot of really new...
Interesting.
A lot of development work in the tech field.
Huh. So now you're doing work mostly in the Northeast?
Yes. So that's where our work is. Primarily, we do consider opportunities in other parts of the states. However, actually, you know, the government makes it very viable to do construction in this area because of different types of incentives that are offered.
Yes, yes. And yeah, in fact, even in the area that I live, which is in Belmont, there were signs all over the area.
Yeah.
They're really promoting. Yeah. Now, this is more, I don't know if it's as much commercial, but residential for homeowners. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a renter, I see on the line that there are certain things that you can do, but I don't quite understand how that works. But in terms of your company is more dealing with business
with
entities,
larger construction, larger
installments. So, and I think one of the incentives that's changing used to be that if you put up solar panels and there was excess energy,
yes,
that you could sell that.
Yeah, it's called net metering. And
okay.
Actually, the cap has just increased so that it isn't, used to be, it's still
it
in
still
place.
It still exists, okay.
Yeah, they just moved forward with increasing the private cap. So,
what does that really mean, increasing the private cap?
So there are two caps in Massachusetts. There's the private and the public cap.
Okay.
Of what is allowed to, of projects that are allowed to then sell their energy back to the grid get this, you know, get this special rate. With the public, it's when you're actually a public entity.
Like, for instance, a TV or a radio station.
If they're public.
Or a car dealership.
Car dealership would be private.
Private,
because
okay.
Because they're for profit. I think it has to be... I think public, I have to look at the you need to be a lawyer to look through this.
Okay.
It's
so
very complicated.
Right, okay.
But like a school or municipal building definitely are able to they get the public cap.
Which means that they can sell more of extra back to
the
grid.
With a certain rate that's prescribed specifically to the public.
So not only would it pay for the panels over a certain period of time, but it would also generate.
It creates revenue.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. That's the big sale.
The
here.
Carrot. That's the carrot.
That's the carrot, and that's where it's my role in this job is to actually promote that message that you know, it's not 20 years you're looking at long term. There are certain ways to actually start seeing savings on the energy bill, especially in commercial spaces, only in a few years, maybe 5. So, I mean, it depends, of course, but...
Well, I know that the price of solar panels has gone down dramatically.
Absolutely.
So that, and that the components that make up the solar panels have become
the modules
have become much more condensed.
Yeah, and affordable.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, most of the equipment could be seen in a lot of different types of power structures, you know, inverters, and the racking just supports it. So it's, there's not innovation there. It's really the modules that really have increased in efficiency. And it's really interesting to talk to people who have been involved in the space 20 years ago when it was so expensive.
Right.
Now there's so much happening. It's really exciting to see. We don't really see it on that end because we do the construction, but there's a lot of innovation in R&D at MIT.
Research and development.
Yes, sorry. I should help with the layman's term. I mean, actually, I was living in Milwaukee for a period of time, and someone was doing research on creating ultra-pure silicon, which is one of the main, chemicals that's used in having the electron exchange in solar modules, and that would boost the efficiency enormously. So there's a lot out there.
Wait, say that last bit again. What would boost the
efficiency? It would increase the efficiency of the module because of electron exchange. I don't know the science behind it all that well. I just have to know it just well enough to...
Well, it's so interesting because in my day gig, which is at the middle school at the Andrews, we were just learning about the elements, and they showed the periodic table, mm-hmm. and they showed the electrons, and the electrons that are all the same, and the ones that have -1 or +1, and that's where you have the interactions.
That's true. Yeah.
So I remember basically from, you know, chemistry a long time ago, they had a fabulous thing. A guy had designed, I forget the man's name, an actual table, a periodic table, not up on the wall, but a physical table of wood, and carved beautiful names of all of the elements, mm-hmm. and then had a component where it opened up and it actually had a vial or what the actual element was. And for the neon ones, obviously it has to be encased in a little thing, but the neon colors were there. It was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool. I was grokking the whole thing, and the kids were like bored, you know, and I'm like, very cool.
Yeah.
And they showed going after in the gold mines, showing how much, like 4,000 tons of material to get down to like an ounce of gold. But that ounce is worth like $250,000 or something. So they ended up with like 7 bars, and the bars are like way heavy, 60 pounds each.
Yeah.
So I'm like loving the whole thing. So the science involved in this industry has really moved the game forward.
Absolutely.
And I know one of the issues too is how to store the energy. That's another big component, because on days when you can't capture energy, do you have the ability to use stored energy, and how are we doing that piece of it?
Certain projects would require some form of batteries, but really the advancements aren't so much there yet. It's not a very efficient process, and requires an enormous amount of maintenance. It's very expensive. Generally, the way we work is we send the power back to the grid. Mm-hmm. And you essentially get a credit for that type of power.
Huh. So
not credit in terms of, you know, you don't get additional money for sending it to the grid necessarily, unless you have those incentives, etc. But more, as long as you have that agreement with the utility company, instead of paying for the energy that the utility would offer, you kind of get that cut off. You don't have to pay for whatever power you've produced with solar.
So where do you see this industry going in the next 5 years?
Well, if some of those advancements actually make it to market, mm-hmm. which always there's risks associated, but at least one of them are going to pan out, there we could see modules, you know, reduce in price substantially, you know, cut in half, and even more so would be competitive, to the extent that maybe they don't need to offer incentives anymore because the power is so cheap. So that's the hope. That is the hope, that it will be, you know, that it'll be on every roof, because it just will make sense.
So one of the things that I have learned is that a roof has to be able to support.
Yes.
Though, so not every roof is
capable.
You
know a lot here.
Well, I mean, I'm interested because, you know, I don't own a property, but I'm in a house, which mm-hmm. is an older property, and I have an older landlord who probably, unless it was really beneficial, wouldn't do it. And I think the sticking point, not only the cost, even though there are incentives, mm-hmm. is the roof able to support the panels? Because if not, you don't want to have to be putting the panels up and then 3 years down the road discover your roof can't handle mm-hmm. it. You have to have site inspectors come out and certify. Of course, we know how that goes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Building inspectors are known to be notorious, but the site inspector, I don't know. I mean, I actually met a woman who's working with a company. I'm trying to think what I did. I have a card of her somewhere. But she was working with a company to try and place solar panels. And might be interesting, you know, if I can remember where I put it.
Hey, it's a good connection. I'm a salesperson. Yeah. I love to meet new people.
Yeah. So she was working for a company, and I'm trying to think if they were based out of Cambridge, which would be a likely situation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so...
With regards to the structural components, yes, the load is very important. Right. We don't generally deal with residential spaces.
Right, right, right.
Actually, I'm not going to say so much more because our, the folks in residential are going to be really perturbed with this comment. But there have been a lot of issues with structural problems where right. people don't check, especially since residential solar is a game of numbers, volume, and speed. With commercial, that's not really the case. You can do a really good job. You have to do a really good job because it's a larger project. And on all of those, structural analysis is always done. And if there are needs, there's additional support that's offered. Construction management is always provided. That's not the case for residential, necessarily.
Okay, so that's an area that probably needs to be tweaked a little bit more.
Yes, yeah. not in our sphere.
Not,
but
right. Yes. Not twerked, but tweaked.
Yes.
Okay, so, but your background wasn't in sales.
Yes, it
initially.
Wasn't.
So I'm interested if you want to share a little bit of how you ended up, at least at this point on your journey.
My background is quite diverse. So on the more technical end, my background is actually in process engineering, which has to do with pipes and valves and fluids. I studied something that had to do with food process engineering. So I'm in the food and beverage side, not at all in solar and energy. On the more sales side, though, is I've had a performance, an act. I've had my own entertainment thing for the past 7 years. So that's really where I gained that performance personality, the sales personality. Also helps that my mother was a saleswoman at some point. So I kind of wanted to marry the two and have a technical background and also be able to speak like a salesperson. So that's where I try to do both in technical sales.
So do you want to talk a little bit about what kind of performing you do?
Sure, absolutely. I do a variety act, juggling, knives, fire, unicycling, acrobatics, miming.
I was trying to remember from our conversation. I did remember juggling. Yeah.
Yes.
I wasn't sure about the knives.
Yeah, I do those too, yeah.
So there's a fellow down in Sharon who used to live in Somerville who does juggling.
Ah, get us in touch.
Yeah, I don't know if he does knives. Yeah.
That's okay.
But
there's a lot out there with the...
Yeah. Well, years back when I lived in Oregon, there was the farmer's market, and there was the Oregon Fair, the county fair, and there were performers who did that. In fact, I remember... well, that wasn't so much juggling, but yeah, people would have all these, amazing skills of hand-to-eye coordination and movement, So did you study with anybody?
No, I've actually, that was similar to my work in sales has been completely from my own work and my own ventures. It was my own practicing and meeting performers and learning from them. I did often practice at the MIT Juggling Club. So
I didn't even know the MIT had a juggling club.
And jugglers tend to actually be fairly technical, a lot of software engineers. And
really?
And, yeah.
Who knew?
So it was a good place for me based on my background.
So you went to MIT?
I didn't go to MIT. I went actually to McGill.
McGill, that's right. You told me that you were
Montreal.
At McGill.
Yeah.
Montreal.
Yeah, Montreal.
Right. The little French connection.
Yeah, there it is. Absolutely, absolutely.
So how often are you performing these days?
It's often a weekend gig. Maybe I'll do something at night from time to time. I do have a gig mid-June, so that's a little bit of a view of how frequent or infrequent it is.
In the middle of trying to get this venture capital situation going, so you're doing that.
It's just something that I do in addition. It's just something I've always done, so I've continued, and it doesn't really conflict with my actual day job. So, yeah.
I'm actually going to give us a little bit of a break. I'm going to put on an artist in the Nature of Things is. The CD. She's a pianist, and she was a professor of English at Columbia, and then she decided at the age of, I don't know, 30, 40 to become a jazz pianist. I mean, talk about switching.
Yeah, switching careers. Yeah.
She is, let me just see what I want to, there you go. Let's do that one. It'll give us a little stretch here. Leslie Pinchuk, I did interview her, and she was just terrific. So, WMFO Medford, I'm here with guest Dylan Stanger.
I got it.
Stanger, thank you.
It's
I knew I'd
problem.
Get it wrong. Well, forgive me. Okay.
Forgiven.
Okay. I want him to help me reset this board and show me again. Oops. Okay, Leslie Pinchuk, and that was There You Go, and it was performed live, as you could tell, and it's from her CD called In the Nature of Things on Pinch Hard Records. I love the title. She's really just an amazing talent, and folks at BK PR firm tuned me into her, and we did this really fun interview. And I don't have the information exactly in front of me, but I know that she was a professor, and I think it was at Columbia, and, you know, decided to make this quantum shift. So it does happen that people switch gears and pick up into, you know, make music in a different way with their life. So it's great. So
same in my life too.
Yeah, Dylan. Yeah, it's a perfect you know, a match.
Yeah.
And Sanger.
Yep, you got it.
Got it. Very good. Okay, so, I mean, my name is so easy, but people mess it up all the time. It's, like, ridiculous. Yeah. So the whole notion of the solar industry, from my perspective, is that we have to do whatever we can to help the planet.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I see, and many people agree, that solar energy is definitely preferable to nuclear and to fracking and to coal industry, all which have really bad, you know, negative effects. And solar, it just seems to be like a win-win-win.
Yeah. Also economically, I mean, it's one of the largest expanding industries for energy, and it definitely requires a lot of jobs.
Yeah, we need jobs.
Installers.
That's right.
And, mm-hmm.
People to manufacture. People to...
And to install. The installing is the main, because that requires a lot of folks on the roofs where you would be able to really scale up that in a nuclear facility, for instance. With roof spaces, you have to have people on the roof to actually install it. You can't automate that.
And they have to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
It's not some, and I mean,
absolutely.
That would be, and it would be people that have to know what they're doing. I mean, it's not just a mindless kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not to say that people who go up on roofs are mindless, but, you know, you have to have your wits about you.
Absolutely.
Or it's very dangerous.
Don't want to fall off. Not that there's, like, no protection, but there.
So, in case anybody out there has notions, the people you're trying to reach are people who have...
Yeah, folks who have fairly large energy bills or large roof spaces, especially ones that where they have fairly volatile bills or very, you know, large electrical loads. Those are the types of folks. And the other thing is that we're young, so we're always looking for folks to be involved with channel partnerships or strategic alliances, property managers, people in real estate, facility managers, folks involved in construction, energy investors, venture capital. We're always looking.
If people are interested to contact
Absolutely.
You, do you want to give them a way to do that?
Absolutely, I can... a number.
Email. However you want to do it. Whatever.
Sure.
Whatever works for you.
I can provide an email address on air.
That's what I'm asking.
On air.
You.
All right.
No, I'm asking. No, think it through. I mean, if that's useful or not.
Yeah.
You know.
It's absolutely. Absolutely.
So I mean, you don't want to give private information if you don't want to.
Yeah.
So think about, you know, what is going to be most helpful and useful for you.
And you can feel free to email us.
Yeah.
Our email is info@landsmansolar.com. Landsman is spelled LANZMAN. Solar, SOLAR.
All right.
.com.
I think you've been captured.
All right, yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for trekking up here to the voicemobile at WMFO.
Mefford, sure.
We're glad to have you here. And I'll be very excited and interested to see how this thing develops.
Absolutely.
The company's private at this point. But at some point it might maybe go public.
Yeah.
If all things...
hopefully, with all things considered, hopefully that might occur. You never know.
In that case, I want to be on board, you know.
You'll be our public relations.
Yeah, no, this is a good thing. I mean, to get involved in something that you believe in, this is always the best thing, especially in terms of sales. If you believe in it,
you have to believe in
the
product.
You have to believe in it,
You don't believe in the product, you're not going to be able to sell it. It shows through.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming up here. And we say, I'll see you on the radio. Don't be late.
Amen.
All right. Let's see. We're going to go here. Okay, it looks like that CD is having a problem, and I don't know why. Let's switch to something else. That's too bad, because that was so relaxing and beautiful. He went to Moravia to get the orchestra that he used to record that. Okay, let's go to... A little different flavor, but still beautiful.
Return to the land of your soul. Return.
Shlomo Carlbach. That is from Shlomo Carlbach Sings with the Children of Israel. And it was V'Hashev Kohanim. Okay. Somehow that doesn't sound like the right title, but I think it is. So, I'm not finding what I want here today. All right, well, we're going to go now to something from Eternal Echoes. This is a fabulous, fabulous CD. I'll tell you more about it after we hear it.
Hashem ro'i lo yechzor Bino is desher yarvitzeini Almei menucho es yenaleni Nafi yesho Magile tzedek
only reason that I'm up on this stage. Never gave up. It's the only reason I think the whole world was made. Don't give up. And if you ask me if I got now something deep in my bones, never give up. Oh yeah. Never. There's too many people in this world that just never try. Yes, they gave up. The fear of failure weighing heavy on their minds. Yes, they gave up. Ain't no success in this world until you fail a few thousand times. But never give up. Oh no, now never give up. And if you ask me now, Lord, aren't you afraid? I tell you, no one more scared than me till this very day. Oh, and if you ask me how I'm standing on this stage, I said, when you know. Be all right.